Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. And again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, notice posts covering finance and property news. Well, we kick off 2026 with Edwin's first rant. Hello, Edwin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Martin. Looks like you must be doing okay. Is there something going on? You've actually got a pretty nicely combed hairpiece today. So you've got a date coming up after the show or something, have you?
Well, no. What happened was I went for a shower and then went out. It's very, very cold here at the moment, actually. We've got this sort of scene, very, very cold weather. So, sunny but cold. And I put my warm hat on before I went out, and when I came back it had cooked. So there you go, you've got a very pinned down me today, which is probably a good way to start the new year. Hang on to your pieces, it's going to be quite a year.
Oh look, definitely it's going to be in the it's going to be a turbulent year in a lot of ways. But look, the unfortunate thing is, and I hate to start the year saying this, but first-time buyers are going to continue to be thrown under the bus, under the trains, under the ferries, under whatever the politicians can throw them under. They're just going to be the meat in the grinder. And that's the unfortunate thing, because I'm already seeing a lot of activity around that space. We've got inquiry for first-time buyers. They can barely make the 1 to 1.1. Now, obviously, they can borrow a bit more, Martin. But these are astute first-time buyers that have been listening and watching our shows and my posts on X and other social media platforms, and they want to stay within their means. That's the general thread of our conversations across all our inquiries so far. It's only early in the first week of the year, but the general conversation is, the general consensus is, look, I don't want to borrow more than what I really have to.
Yeah, well, that's affordability question is absolutely top of mind for many people in my one-on-ones. I see it, and I've got more one-on-ones scheduled later for today. So it is a really interesting proposition where the banks are saying, sure, you can borrow this amount, but actually more and more people are saying, well, hang on, when I do my own numbers, I only want to borrow this amount. And what that means is that their capacity to be able to meet the market is actually less than they might aspire to, but they're not prepared to get into the debt trap. And I think that's really important. I made a show the other day called Confirmation Australia's Housing Market is Turning. This is based on the Cotality data. But, you've got to understand that actually it's much, much more complex. Again, it goes back to granularity. Look at where you're buying, what you're buying. But I am very interested in this dynamic for first-time buyers who are being way more sensible than the government would want them to be. So speculate that we're going to see ever more money being showered in various ways to try and keep this market bubbling along. But there are more and more first-time buyers saying, no, I'm going to do the math. I know what I can actually afford to borrow, and I ain't paying a penny more.
Yeah, the only thing is, Martin, the fact that the first-time buyers are being outbid and outbought by the investors that still see a great opportunity in that freestanding home market where they're speculating on the land values going up, and it's speculating by way of real data points as well, because of the fact that there's not a lot being built, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the constraints to building in 2026 and more to the point in Victoria and how that's going to look into flow into 2026 in Sydney as well. But see, this is the whole aspect: is, are we going to get a bigger investor force coming in those markets to compete against the first time buyers? In a way, the sensibility is, at the moment, from what we have in the early days, is the sensibility is really going to be outpaced by the investors coming in and taking advantage. Like, it's that's what I say. Like, unfortunate, Martin, The unfortunate thing is that first-time buyers have been thrown under the bus for a number of years, which I've been talking about since, a lot of these incentives, even since, back before Mins, our old mate Dom Perrottet that still listens and watches our show. So it's orchestrated, and it's being and it's playing out the way perhaps the bigger picture, the grand scheme of things, I want it to play out.
Well, I think that's important to understand. And here's some context. Of course, the first one is that if you look at this, is the totality chart. The total listings, this is the percentage of deviation from 5-year averages, and it's based on a 4-week average. Totality is now suggesting that there are more listings in Sydney than Melbourne than average over the last little while. Whereas, in fact, in Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth, and therefore across the average of Australia, it's a very different story. But I think this is very interesting because you can see there that they're tracking what happened 3 months ago and 6 months ago. And what we're seeing is maybe more listings. We've also got, of course, the other factor to bear in mind is we've got more of the economy, government supported, government spending is very high. The expectation of interest rates continues to climb. And in fact, this article, which came out from the AFR, which Tarek highlighted, repeated rapid interest rate rises coming this year, economists say, suggest to me that there is, again, a lot of sense of cautiousness about first-time buyers. But property investors, it's very interesting. Again, going back to my analysis and my one-on-ones, a lot of property investors are seeing their gross investment yield getting squeezed because while the price to purchase is going up, the rental that they can drive isn't going up as fast. And then if you actually calculate the net rental yield, which is the real cash flow on investment, more and more property investors are actually underwater from a cash flow perspective. Now, if you believe that property prices are maybe not going to shoot up so high in some areas for property investors, and as we are seeing, for example, in Melbourne, where property investors are bailing in spades because they can't make any returns, it could change the dynamic and maybe the balance between investors and first-time buyers. But the truth is, the property market is messed dramatically by government intervention and particularly investor support from government, whether that's the tax breaks and the capital gains breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not going to change that, I don't think, anytime soon. But I am interested in this dynamic where first-time buyers are actually hunkering down and saying, I'm not prepared to spend as much. And investors are saying, well, hang on a minute, I'm not making returns on this investment property. And of course, returns elsewhere, if you look in the stock markets, for example, they've done quite well and gold's doing very well and silver doing even better. So maybe there are other investment classes better than property.
That would be one side of the equation. The other perspective, of course, is that a lot of people, even the people that have been investing in those asset classes, now have made huge gains in a matter of weeks. And they are the what I call the group, the desperate housewives that are going to be now pushing their husbands, the partners, into saying, hey, listen, you fell that lump of silver that Uppercut Adam sold you 4 years ago that you paid $50,000 for. Now it's worth $150,000. Let's pull it out and get into a home quickly before the market, the property prices go up, because is silver going to stagnate a lot more? These are all the thoughts. These are all the initial thoughts that in processes that a lot of people are going through, the different groups go through. And this is what you and I look at from different perspectives and see what they're thinking, how they may be thinking. And it's going to, as we said earlier on, it's going to be a roller coaster ride for some, but it's going to be an interesting 2026. I believe that 2026 isn't going to be filled with as many properties as what Totality and all the others mainstreams are talking about, because the numbers aren't there. Now, if you lump Melbourne and Sydney together, well, the numbers are vastly different. But if you pull Melbourne apart, put to one side, and Sydney put to the other side, and you take away the land envelopes, hey, it's a different dynamic altogether, because nobody wants to build. Nobody wants to build in Melbourne. Nobody wants to build in Sydney. I mean, I'm not saying nobody, but there's a lot of there's very little because the developers aren't getting the return on their investment The profits aren't there. The banks aren't going to be lending in future for future developments, for future construction, because the numbers aren't really there when you want to meet the market with a new product. But whereas with an established area, an established home, and this is what people are first-time buyers are more driven to, and owner-occupiers. Of course, the other thing there, Martin, is what's going to be very, very interesting to see how it's going to play out over 2026. So your downsizers, your empty nesters, because that's the other, again, that's something else that the first-time buyers are, they become arch enemies of the first-time buyers, because these are people that are retiring, you know, on $3 million, $4 million of an asset worth $3 million, $4 million, and they go down to buy a villa or a townhouse in the locality that's maybe worth $1.5, but they'll drive the price of that villa or that townhouse, they'll drive it up to $2 million because they can, because when they bought their homes in the 70s, 60s, mid-50s, mid-60s, they bought it for pennies, and now they're selling it for millions. So for them, to have $2 million, $2.5 million left over after the purchase of a smaller property, it doesn't really dent their the proposed outcome. Whereas it's really pushing the first home buyers that want to go stay into the established areas, want to stay into the areas where they were born and grew up and went to school with and have all their mates. They've been forced out. So there's a lot at play. But the unfortunate thing, Martin, overall is today, talking to the trades that we deal with the renovations that we assist our clients with, two out of three the groups that I've spoken to today have already given us a warning. Guess what? The cost of materials are going up. Cost of materials are going up, and there's a greater delay in some of the some of the goods and some of the services, because we've had closures of major local glazing companies, and that's affecting anything to do with glass in a renovation or in a new build. So now the waiting list right now for shower screens, for example, I thought I was going to get a couple of shower screens for some of the renovations that we ordered before Christmas, a week or so before Christmas. We've just been hit and given the bad news that won't be coming until the third week of January, because things are really slowed down in terms of delivery, because one, the demand, two, there's the supply of raw materials, so it's really not playing out well from all sides, in my view, for those that are wanting to come into the market, because there's going to be less property. That's again from all the data points that we're starting to gather, what we saw happening towards in the last quarter of 2025, it's not showing us growth in listings, because there's going to be a lot more hesitation, from the empty nesters and the downsizers, because they've also got nowhere to go. But obviously the numbers are going to paint that picture for us as we go through the year.
Yes, obviously we'll get into the numbers as the show and as the year progresses. But I just want to come back to Melbourne a little bit, because I do think there's a really interesting observation here. Now, I was reading an article the other day suggesting that Melbourne has been, quote, more successful in terms of building new properties relative to its population than Sydney. And I'm thinking, well, that's very interesting, because if you look at the Melbourne market at the moment, it's all over the place. And it's fascinating when you look more closely to say, well, I'm not sure that's actually strictly true. Depends on your definition of Melbourne and how big and all those things. But the other interesting observation, and it's actually picked up in this AFR article, is that we're getting developers being significantly taxed for each new home near the Melbourne rail loop, and charged $11,350 per new dwelling in the SRL precinct. And this is just one example, Edwin, of many, where effectively the costs to develop in Melbourne has gone through the roof. So as well as the costs of supply of labour, the cost of supply of materials, you've got this other barrier too. And when I read the article that's saying, well, they built more. When you actually look more closely, what they actually also said was, well, that was then, but now there's a whole new environment in Melbourne, and therefore the opportunity for new construction in the greater Melbourne area has fallen through the floor because of government policy.
Yeah, look, what they're trying to build in around that, around the Melbourne Rail Loop, obviously, is the high-rise development, which is going to cost developers a hell of a lot of money. What you're going to end up having is developers won't be able to build, they won't be able to borrow from the banks. The banks won't lend them because the cost of construction will then surpass the what people will, the ceiling that people are prepared to pay for a two-bedroom apartment or three-bedroom apartment, even a one-bedroom apartment in those high-rise developments. And unless you break those ceilings, and to break those ceilings, you've got to have a lot of other things coming in, and the economy's got to be strong. You've got to have a lot of investors coming in as well, which is totally the opposite of what's happening in Melbourne. So developers are going to start running. They'll dump the land that they're holding. They'll dump it, which will put more established homes on back on the market, because obviously they've taken options across 3, 4, 5 adjoining properties in order to build a high rise, and they'll put them back up because it would make more sense for them to drop 5-10% on the purchase of the land or the options that they paid on the land, rather than losing a hell of a lot more at the end of the construction or during the construction, because they won't be able to complete, or they'll go broke. So these are all the dynamics that are playing out there, the taxes that are coming in. Yeah, look. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you could say, Melbourne's built a lot more than what Sydney has, and it's really going, hell for leather in terms of expanding the outer regions of Melbourne and all that, all the subdivisions and everything. And that's why the WeChat chatters were buying in, we're buying in not only one, but we're buying 2 or 3 investment properties at a time. And this is why it hurt the Melbourne market so much when the WeChat chatters, just over 2 years ago, called it quits and said, we got to get out, because government policy and everything else is just making it non-efficient to own an investment property, and that's where and here we are, right? Here we are. We've got 3 times as many, almost twice as many overall properties on the market than Sydney, and we've got almost three times as many freestanding homes for sale in Melbourne than what we have in Sydney. So this is how it's all going to play out. So in my opinion, based on my number one prediction for 2026 is that. That Melbourne's still got to bleed another 7-10% before it finds a floor, and because the great Victorian exodus still yet to play out. Obviously, I'm going to go toe to toe with other property commentators and reporters that would think otherwise. They think that Melbourne's going to rebound. Melbourne's going to have a gain. There's a few things that. That I don't believe they're taking in consideration, and the oversupply, policy pressures, local social changes, they haven't finished playing out. As I put it up in that post, they really, in my opinion, have not finished playing out. And whilst we're keeping a very close ear to the ground with the WeChat chatter investors, because they make up the majority of the investment group down there. Whilst they're still across the forum saying get out, get out, get out, even at a loss, just simply get out, I don't believe things are going to change.
Absolutely. And I do think there's an interesting analog here with what's going on in the UK, because the question of government intervention, government control, building restrictions, all of those things, it can actually really rock the boat when it comes to the property cycle. And here's an example from the UK, which is basically saying why houses are not being built. It's not about plan permission. There's 400,000 plots of permission, but houses are not being built. And they go on to talk about why it is. And again, it's the same story. It's the lack of capability in terms of house builders. It's the problem with the planning permissions. But it is very much also about all the other barriers that are in the way. And I think it's true to say that what is happening in the UK with losing control of developments and, frankly, losing control of the economy more broadly is a bit of a mirror image of what may well be happening or will be happening down in Australia, particularly in Melbourne as well.
Well, I'd say, look, I'd make it, I'd really localise that point that you just made to Melbourne. Very much sticking on, this is really sticking on Melbourne. And when you watch that video, it is an interesting video. I don't know if you had the chance to watch it, Martin, but it's an absolutely fascinating little video. And it calls out it pulls out the receipts in that video. I started following him to keep an interest to see what's happening there, because I sort of see that very much the mirror image of what's happening in Melbourne. Like you said, government policy, building companies going broke. In a way, with a lot of the appetite that's around Sydney and a lot of other capital cities around Australia, because of the sheer small volume of numbers on market, sort of differentiates us from what's happening over in over in the UK, also in Canada as well. A lot of punters like to bring Canada into the mix, but whereas when you look at the Melbourne market, it's a different kettle of fish altogether. It's a different dynamic. The socialist policies there are a lot stronger. So we haven't got there yet, but we could get there. And the other interesting thing that was brought out in that video was how the Chinese investors, obviously, it doesn't bring out the fact that money from China, mainland China, stopped coming out, but he doesn't bring that out. Like, obviously, Chinese investors from other parts of the world as well that were investing heavily in the UK have pulled the pin, and quite frankly, they were the I call them the sweepers. They would sweep up any property, as you point out in the video as well, any property that other investors don't really want, they will sweep them up and take them on, because for them it's more about parking money, parking wealth elsewhere, as opposed to all the other things that investors really look for, local investors look for. So similarly to Melbourne, whereas with the Witch Chatterers are saying here, get out of Melbourne. So it was just uncanny. It was uncanny what's happening there. But for that to play out across the board, look, we would have to have, as I've been saying for a couple of years now, we would have to have double the number of properties on the market in order to really quench the beast. Because of the government policy of what nobody wants to talk about, no politician really wants to bring to a head, and that's the immigration policy.
Absolutely. And just for the final point on the UK, there were a couple of really interesting observations in that video, like the fact that 13 building companies were going broke every day, apprenticeships are down 70%, and construction workers are emigrating to Australia and Canada. So people are actually going away simply because it's not possible to get a really good life in the UK. And, you wonder about the analogue with Melbourne there, right? People are moving towards Sydney or Perth or the Gold Coast or up in Queensland, elsewhere, anywhere but Melbourne, I would say, which is why we are, I think, are right to say Melbourne is a really interesting case study. When government intervention gets out of hand, this is what happens, and it's a question of how it's going to play out. But more broadly, I suppose, Edwin, the other question is, the government's support for the housing market directly and indirectly is a very significant factor that some people see. Now, it's interesting, this article here highlights the fact that unions are now calling for the end of tax breaks that make Australian housing, quote, a vehicle for hoarding wealth. So the Manufacturing Workers Union wants capital gains tax discounts to be reduced and then phased out, and an effective way of negative gearing ending as well. So there you go. Interestingly, I don't think the government will do it, because, of course, the government is concluded of politicians who, guess what, have multiple geared investment properties.
Yeah, the interesting thing there, Martin, is they start sort of talking a bit of sense. We know that they've got to taper that down. We know that something's got to happen there. It's only a matter of who's got the balls to actually put it into play. Not, nor, not, neither the Labor government's current and previous governments have had the balls. They all talk big, but they don't really go ahead. But the interesting thing is the union body also calls it, says it's also suggested the federal government replaces its 5% home deposit scheme with one that allows renters to allocate a portion of their rent to buy a property. I mean, you're going, it's a matter of dumb and dumber. Well, I mean, what do you do? You sort of start on the right foot and then end up tripping over yourself. They really don't think about these things, really. They've got nobody within nobody that's within the property sector advising them. But you know what's a good thing? Look, when I read the article, when I was sharing it with you, when we were talking about it, and one of the sure things is that what all this does is that creates it's a great committee starter. And that's really what it's all about.
Yes. More job creation. Let's create a few more committees. Let's have more people making more reports, and actually, we can get a few more people employed by the government in the process. That must help, mustn't it?
Yeah, well, so who's going to manage all the? Who's going to manage that percentage of the rents that have been paid? I mean, do these people actually think about this shit before they start giving it to reporters? I mean, they really should bounce this around a little bit more before they start talking. I mean, can you imagine the infrastructure that would be required to manage those incomes? But look, at the end of the day, really, what's it all about? It's about a money grab, because is it ever going to get used? I mean, a lot of people will forget about that seed funding that they're putting into that some account. I mean, look, I've got super in probably in about from my younger days where I've probably got super in about three or four different super what are they called? Super the deposit firms, whatever, that would take it from the different when I was in the, I think part of them were in some REI group, super and this and that. I mean, anyway, so my super went, but I've never claimed it. I wouldn't know what's out there that I've got from my younger days, because I didn't manage any of that myself personally. And so at the end, when it's not claimed, it all goes back to the government says, okay, I will take it. So I don't know. It's crazy stuff, man. It's really, in my opinion, they started, it was an interesting at the beginning, but then they just kept on tripping over themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will just mention there was a show I made a little while ago with John Wright, who's an academic, and it was relating to this idea that the housing market is actually messed up because of what he calls it, the carry trade, which basically he blames the investor segment as and with government support as effectively the critical thing. If you really want to solve the housing issue, that's what you've got to tackle. I recommend people go and check that show out because it's a really powerful exposition of a way of thinking, and he actually uses an example of the Terminator, and the film of the Terminator, and draws some interesting analogies. But the point is, I want to make is that the political class is completely compromised, because they might say they want to do X, but they won't do X, they'll do Y. And that's partly because of all the other power plays that are going on. The building and construction sector, of course, are big lobbyists. The banks are big lobbyists as well. And the fact is that a lot of politicians own a lot of property too. So they're not necessarily going to do the right thing for the country. They're going to do the right thing for those other stakeholders or themselves. And in the meantime, ordinary people get absolutely crucified by this ever-rising housing problem, where the affordability question just goes on. So people actually end up putting more and more and more and more of their income to try and get into the property market. And what I'm fascinated by here are all the forecasts from those visionaries, okay, in the property sector and the hangers-on and the economists, right? At the start of this year, You know, it is fascinating to see how this comes out. Now, you actually, you picked this one, right? So Stephen Cook, house prices are falling in Sydney and Melbourne. This is the start of something big. Well, here you go. Now, you've actually responded vis-a-vis Sydney.
Well, it's I put up my predictions now. They're on my you know, on my handle. I pinned to my handle. I even put it up on LinkedIn. I mean, look, these are calls by people like the Cook and just cherry pick whatever information they want to just say whatever whatever they want on X or create a discussion. I mean, look, he's got a great following. I think he's one of the he really upsets a lot of the people, and that upsetting a lot of people means that he gets a lot of followers. And now you all mark my words, this should be one of my predictions, is that he's probably going to start getting advertising commercials and everything on his posts, and he'll probably start making a lot of money out of it, because he certainly draws a big crowd. I just screenshot that and I counted that. Obviously, I've got my opinions on what's going to happen in Melbourne, but I also got my opinions based on my data points and our data points from our team of what we feel and what we believe is going to happen in Sydney, because we look at broadly. But Shane Oliver's, I just came across that on LinkedIn today. That was rather interesting. He's calling no rate rises across 2026. Whatsoever, he's got his reasons for that, but he's also calling a 6% rise across the board in the overall property market. He doesn't go into specifics. He's in this particular post, he's calling a 6% rise across the board in Australia in 2026. So no rate rises. And 6% across the board. That was rather an interesting call. But I thought the ABC's domain forecast was more interesting, Martin.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You gave them a hand, I think, with regard to Melbourne.
I just gave them a phone call and said, look, can you amend the Melbourne section? And I just said that, and they just sent that back to me. So here you go.
No, very good. And you know, the fact is nobody really knows, right? Because there are so many variables and so many uncertainties. But everybody's got an opinion. And I just want to remind everybody, Edwin, that when you talk about what's going to happen with property, these high level, going to go up, going to go down, going to go left, going to go right, is meaningless, right? You've actually have to go, guess what, granular. You have to look at the local market. You have to look at what's going on. Compare Melbourne with Sydney, very different markets, very different dynamics, as we've explained. And the truth is also the same in other places too. So before we get on, the hobby horse of saying everything's going to go up or everything's going to go down, or it's all going to be great, it's all going to be terrible. The truth is it's much more complicated than that. What we try to do on this show is move away from those high level, headlines that will be clickbait, funnily enough, but actually get into the real granular detail. And that's why it's important to really go a little bit further and understand a bit more about what's going on.
Well, 100%, Martin. This is where I give a saying to a lot of people. And then you pick a suburb and you could go street from street and it'll be the same builder that built they're building a subdivision in established areas in the early 70s, early 80s, and I'm talking about freestanding homes, and homes could be $50,000, $100,000, $150,000 apart, and a lot of people ask themselves why. But it's until you get into the nuts and bolts, as you said, into the granularity of it, you find out that one side of the street, is the border of one LGA, and the other side of the street is the border of another LGA. One allows a duplex development, another one doesn't, and the LEP controls, development controls change from one LGA to another. I mean, there's a lot of things that come into play. There's a lot of factors, and even easements and sewer easements, water easements, electrical easements, all these things play out. And so Likewise with apartments. So you've really got to go granular. This is where, in one of my predictions, I talk about the if you're going to be relying on your AI property, your buyer's agents or buyer's advocates, well, you're going to miss. You're going to you could be spending a hell of a lot more money than what it's than what you paid up front for these laptop. Laptop real estate agents, because that's what they are, and a lot of the information that they're given out, you can get yourself anyway. So this is something that the industry needs to change. People need to be more aware, and this is what we're going to make 2026 is more for me. It's talking to the team. I've expressed my views with the fact I want to be putting out more information out there on LinkedIn, on the other social media platforms that I've come on, and just give that, educate the people to be more aware and find more ways, find ways that we can help our followers and our viewers with obtaining greater information so that they can make greater decisions. Look, not everybody, it's only a small percentage of the population that will use me as and my team, Dusty and Evan and Linda and Chris, our team will, as to assist them with a property purchase, and we understand that. But at the same time, for the show, we want to, we want to educate and give that, like you do with your, with your surveys of different areas, from time to time. You're, apart from your one-on-ones, you do the live shows, where people can send you stuff. So this is, to me, this is where we're building that community that we can rely on each other's expertise. Not everyone's going to use us, but hell, if we can make their life a lot better, by the information that they get, the world will be a better place and better informed place when they go out and make a property decision.
Oh, absolutely. And I do think it's a three-step process. The first step, Edwin, is to raise doubts in people's minds. So get them to question these high-level property indices that come out, and automatically assume that means everything's gone up 5% or down percent, whatever it is, right? So, or question why it is that there isn't the granular information readily available on the property portals, or question why it is that real estate agents are not actually necessarily telling the full story when it comes to properties, or indeed persuading people to go into the auction market rather than the the private sale market. You know, what's going on there? The first step is to put questions in people's minds. Now, that's important, because unless you stop and think, you won't get onto the second one, which is, okay, then, so where do I go? How do I actually get a handle on better information? And that's where we start talking about the different information sources and all of the things that we can do. And then thirdly, very importantly, it becomes actionable, because, of course, we still want people to actually make good property decisions. We still want people to go buy property and, if they need to trade up or trade down, sell property. So we're not anti-property, but what we are saying is question initially, get armed with the information, and then make good decisions positively. That's the journey that I see.
Yeah, look, 100%. In 2026, it requires that, because the unfortunate thing is that things, they're almost there, but there's no real fixes, because a lot of the government is hanging on to past policies. They're trying to bring in band-aid solutions to fix this and to fix that. The whole thing's just got to break before it can be fixed. And it's going to be more turbulent. But for those that take a deep breath, take a step back, and or step up to look at it more from a higher perspective, I think 2026 will be very rewarding, because whilst everybody else is running around like a chunk with its head cut off, they'll be able to make better and more strategic decisions, whether it is moving money from one asset class to another, whether buying that principal place of residence or still waiting, whatever the case may be, because it all comes back to taking everything into account. I had a conversation today with one of our very good clients. He's got he's worked for 34 years of his life, hard work. He's worked very, very hard. He's ran a business, employed people. He's physically broken. He's only 55. He's physically broken. His hip, you know, he needs a hip replacement, but he's too young apparently to get a hip replacement. He's got his knees given in. He says he's only got 2 or 3 more years to go in to run the business. It's a pretty hectic business that he runs. In terms of body, the use of his body, it's pretty hectic. So he's in a position where he needs to make property decisions because he's got a couple of investment properties. And I said, look, mate, as much as I'd like to tell you that I could help you with this side of, with property and where to buy, how to buy, what we can do, renovate, flip, whatever, all that sort of side, I'd said, look, that I'm limited. And I do not want to give you the wrong financial advice because you've got to look at a retirement strategy. So I handed it over to another expert. So whereas what we've got is we've got a lot of people online and on social media, they believe they're experts at everything and leading people down the wrong path. And as you said, Martin, there's also people that are in the buying side, first-time buyers, that aren't educated, and they believe that as I've always said, they believe that the selling agent is their friend. And they go in with into the negotiations not knowing that they've got both hands tied behind the back and they've got Mike Tyson coming at from the other corner.
Well, absolutely. And it's interesting, Edwin, because one of the things I realized when I was getting feedback over the last little while with regard to my shows, that I'm making quite a lot of big assumptions about what people actually know. And so one of the things I want to do this year is to go back to some of the basics. I actually made a show yesterday called 6 Levers to Pull to Boost Your Finances in 2026. Now, this wasn't financial advice, but this was simple things like, well, making sure that you know what the interest rate is on your mortgage and on your deposit accounts, and make sure you've actually checked for them to be the best, or to make sure that you know where transactions are going. Look at the statements that you've got on your accounts and make sure you've not got those recurring payments being set up. And a few other little suggestions, like, for example, don't automatically take the annual renewal from your insurance company because they price walk. In other words, if you're an existing customer, they're going to put your price up more than if you're a new customer. So shop around. And so this whole idea of taking control of your own finances, I think this is really powerful, especially now. So we're going to do a little bit more as well on this sort of more basic end of the story to try and actually help people be more empowered to make better decisions. Because that to me seems to be what we can do most effectively and differently from the economists who only have a sort of a particular pedal relating to, prices going up, prices going down, and what's going to happen to the economy. This is a rather different angle of attack. It's trying to be much more practical. It's trying to be much more proactive when it comes to providing people with the tools and the ideas to be able to make better decisions. So I think there's a really big opportunity here. So that's what we're going to focus on. But we'll also do the numbers as well. And you have put some numbers together. It's interesting, actually, if we look at the numbers for the Sydney region, this is based on the listings in the Greater Sydney region as defined by Domain. On the 2nd of January 2026, on the 2nd of January 2026, 18,570 properties. And on the 5th, 18,724. That's a little bit of an interesting take. And you've got your chart here. And again, I think it's really important that you actually pull out the land, right? Because the land, well, it muffs the numbers, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, it does. So what we're saying is the green now is the 2026 numbers. So we're starting from week one, where we're pretty much on par with 2025 numbers, the way that we started. And this is after we've taken out the huge deposit or listings of land envelopes. So we're pretty much on par. It's still early days, but this is how we've just started for Sydney. I've marked it. I'm putting all for the 23, 24, 25, and 26 numbers, so we can get a real comparison of the numbers as opposed to Caitali and everybody else, spinning their little BS stories throughout the year and trying to spruik the market, spruik the numbers. But these are real numbers, listings on market. And as we move to Melbourne, it's same old, same old. It's still early days, so let's not get too carried away with the numbers at the moment, because we'll see. So far, from discussions that I've had, not a lot. It's only been what, Friday, started chasing people up, and then that was the first Saturday, not much activity. Now we're moving into the new week, so you could say, across both hands, it's a 50-50 call. Some believe they're going to get more numbers in the first quarter. Others believe that, but then we go back to the areas. There are, two agents in one particular area said they're swamped with calls for people trying to get the properties listed on market. And then there's other areas, further up north, and they're saying crickets. They feel like they want to take another week off.
Well, I think it does vary by the region and location as well. So that's something else to bear in mind. Let's look at Melbourne just briefly. So last week we had 25,144 properties listed. This week it's 25,043. So a little change. Brisbane, last week 2,136, 2,196. So just beginning to stir. And of course, the auctions, well, crickets, as you say, last week, and not a lot this week. It's really going to be next week. But it is worth tracking again this idea of, well, how many auctions are actually coming to market. And I still think we are seeing a more constrained story when it comes to the auctions themselves.
Yeah, this is one part of our conversation that I could say I'm all in. I'm convinced that the auction numbers are going to be a lot less than they were in previous years. If you look at the first few weeks of 2024 and 2025, underneath the graph, there, the chart there, you'll see the numbers. It's early days. It's early days in the year. But look at the same week and the same weeks in 24 and 25, we've only been going down in 26. It's a really, really slow start. So only five, although there was only seven the same week. Next week, next Saturday's auction, the second week of auctions for 2025. But look, I don't, again, because the areas that favor the auction campaigns, and there's a huge push by the agencies for auction campaigns. I feel a lot of those more established areas, the people that they're looking at listing the properties on the market, unless they really get an exceptional price, or they're promised an exceptional price, I don't feel that those numbers are going to clock up. Are we going to be down 10%, 20% on 2025's numbers? Maybe. Because of the sentiment, because they need to get a lot more, because they want to retire in the same areas, and the smaller homes, single level homes, become very pricey because there's a lot more competition, because everybody wants them.
Yeah, very good. And I do think that's very important. Again, I want to highlight region specific is really important, right? Different regions are behaving quite differently at the moment. I showed that, I think, in our live show last week, when we actually went through a couple of different examples where prices have gone up, where prices have gone down, where prices have gone sideways. Very different areas, and I think that's worth bearing in mind here. We'll just look briefly at the rentals, just to complete the picture, as we always do. The rental story is important too, of course, not least because more than one third of people in Australia are renting at the moment, and in fact, a greater proportion are renters than ever before. So it is important. So last week, 10,583 properties listed for rent in the Sydney region. Go forward a week, 11,228. So a bit of a small rise, but a rise nevertheless. In Melbourne, 10,517 last week, compared with 10,855 this week. Again, early days, but I do see this continued pressure on rents rising, particularly for existing renters in existing properties being served again with more notice of another price rise. And again, I come back quite often, that price rise is not coming directly from the investor. It's coming from the managing agent who's actually driving these things higher. Why? Because, of course, it improves their income, doesn't it?
100%. My son at the moment, is him and his wife, they're reinvesting. Their lease is up, and they're living in the West. And the property manager is pushing them for a 12 month. They just want to basically just stay there for 6 months because they're looking for a principal place of residence, looking at selling their investment or property and looking for a principal place of residence and a permanent place of residence. But it's very difficult. And, you know, obviously he's calling dad to help him out with how to structure the lease, what to do, because the agent's really pushing. And so I asked him about the conversations with the agents, and they're saying, look, they're getting everybody to, even his friends are all being pushed into 12-month leases on the renewal because the property managers want to do less work, have their regular income and earn more. And obviously, yeah, and that's another thing. It's not just a new lease. It's also a new lease with a 60-day notice of a rental increase. What are the choices? What do renters have? Choices: spend $2,000 in removalist costs, and 2 weeks of rent loss when you're moving. Whilst you're doing the transition, you're going to be paying extra one or the other. The agents will want the properties professionally cleaned or cleaned to their standard. There's all this plus. So it's costing people, around about or upwards of $5,000 just to move extra on top of the rent. And what do they get? Something smaller than what they were in. So a lot of the young people are opting to pay the extra rental increase, take on the new lease. As I said to my son, I said, look, son, look, be clear of the break lease clause. And as long as you're comfortable with that, just, sitting there, you don't have to stay there. You can break the lease. That's why they've got the break lease clauses in the agreements. You just got to account for that. And it's not cheap anyway, but still it's better than being locked in and going through different avenues. So it is costly, Martin, as you say, it is costly. And the mainstream media is still not talking about it other than Louis Christopher.
No, absolutely. It is a disgrace that this very critical issue is not getting the coverage that it deserves. It goes right back to what I said. You need to raise the awareness of the issue and then help people sort of navigate. And that's what we try to do here. Edwin, as you come to the end of the show, you have a tip for 2026. Let's face it, 2025 is gone, right? So what does that tell you?
Look, every time I've been thinking about what the tips I'll put up on my X handle soon. Basically, we just got to leave 2025 behind. It was turbulent in many ways, for many people. And if we're going to be pining on 2025, what could have been, what I could have done, what I should have done, what I would have done, blah, blah, blah. Just got to turn your back on it. The best thing we can do is just set it on fire and walk across the bridge and get on with life. 2026, it's going to have its hurdles. It's going to have its obstacles, but it also has its opportunities. And if we go into 2026 with a clear mind, not thinking about 2025, what happened, what didn't, what could have, what should have, well, then we're going to have that clarity. And when that opportunity comes about, we're going to be able to take it by the horns and ride it. Otherwise, pining about 2025, the would have, could have, should have, is only going to make us more depressed. And we're not going to be able to see the opportunities that 2026 is going to present to us.
And I think that's very important. I always say to people, remember that the future is generally not set yet, right? So you can actually control and steer the future. What you can't do anything about is what's happened. It's already passed. It's waters under the bridge. So don't look back with regret. Don't look back and say, if only I'd done X or Y. Look forward and then begin to lay some plans and some strategies to take you to where you want to go in 2026 and beyond. So the future is generally open. So use this opportunity to clear the decks and then head for the open uplands where hopefully 2026 for many people will be better than 2025. Edwin, very important show today. Thank you very much for your time. As always, look forward to doing it all next week. And I can't believe that we're already in 2026. Before we know it, it'll be 2027.
Before we know it, it'll be 2030, and we'll be in high-rise. what do I call it? 15-minute.
15-minute cities, exactly, complex. Exactly.
Cities, yeah. Like, Costco's already building them, Martin.
Yeah, very true. Edwin, thanks very much. Catch you again. Have a good week.
Take care, Martin. All the very best.
Bye-bye.